I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Over the last year, through my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a five-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. Over the next few weeks, I'll be talking to people who inspire me and remind us to take better care of ourselves, and people who I believe you, the listener, will benefit greatly by listening to. I'm so delighted to be joined today by Holly White, who's certified in plant-based nutrition. Hi, Holly. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I am a huge fan. I absolutely love everything that you're doing and your message.
I'm so delighted you're here today, Holly, because over the last year, I suppose, food has been a massive part of my life and everything has changed so much. So it's great to have you in today. You wrote a book called Vegan-ish,
yes,
which I'm kind of new to this term. So tell us a little bit about, I suppose, your journey and where you are right now.
I suppose if I went back to the very, very beginning, when I was a baby, milk didn't agree with me at all. And definitely, I think my mum would have found it difficult to find like a formula. And I used to break out in a rash and very uncomfortable. And then, to be honest, really, I sort of buried those feelings for the bulk of my 20s. And I ate whatever anyone would consider a traditional Irish diet. I was obsessed with mints and, you know, rashers and so I was never into things like game or anything like that, but I ate a very standard normal diet. And then around when I turned 30, I had that very typical kind of life reevaluation. I also got Netflix and I watched a lot of documentaries. Fat, Sick and Nearly Dead is brilliant. That's all about a man named Joe Cross who does a juice detox, which is kind of, it's kind of like a fascinating journey. Then there's Earthlings, Forks Over Knives and Cowspiracy. And it probably was a product of city living, but I honestly hadn't made the connection between what's actually happening in terms of how is my meat or produce getting into the supermarket all wrapped up nice and clean in plastic. And I it sounds so stupid to say this, but I hadn't made the connection between the fact that something had to die to get onto my plate. And once I watched abattoir footage and once I researched a lot of the climate impact, for me it was quite an easy mental decision. I kind of said, this doesn't make any sense. And I also decided to really think kind of independently what feels right for me in my heart. And I don't know why it took me so long, but I do think that on a day-to-day basis, we're bombarded with advertisements in terms of food and treat yourself and sleep in and get this takeaway and do that and feel great. And you see all these beautiful people and you think, oh, if I get that takeaway or if I sleep in or if I eat that tub of ice cream, I'll feel better. But the reality is you really don't. So kind of scaled it all back and I said what feels right for me. And then cut out all meat, eggs, dairy. I ate fish for about 6 months. And then eventually that went completely. And then after about a year of eating that way, I realized I need to learn how to cook properly. So I started doing different training courses and I went over to London and I trained with the World Food Cafe. And then I went over to Los Angeles. And then along the way, I became certified in plant-based nutrition. And just through sharing online, it kind of built up a whole community and followers were suddenly kind of asking me whether it was for recipes or giving recommendations or anything like that. And it's become my career, but in a really organic, natural way.
It seems like you're doing exactly what you were always supposed to do. Like you really believe in it. I am not a vegan. When I got sick and I went into my oncologist, she said there is no diet for this except for a balanced diet.
Yes.
Because I do think people are reluctant to talk about cancer and diet. And it's kind of this grey area that no one really wants to give much advice on. I'm not a vegan. I eat a steak on a Saturday. But what I do is I'm vegetarian during the week. So it's a very gradual process for me. And I'm finding if I go to events or I go to weddings, I'll always choose the vegetarian option now, which I never did before because I always kind of felt like I should have this steak to give me energy to get through whatever function I'm at. But I was at a wedding last week and I had the vegetarian option and I felt great after it. So I suppose through my cancer journey, my portions of fruit and veg have probably trebled. So I'm going for 5 to 7 portions a day. Now, I would normally reach about 7. And then on a bad day, maybe on a Saturday or Sunday, I might just have 2 or 3. Uh-huh. But they kind of balance out. And I try not to kill myself over that too much, you know. But yes, I suppose I'm leaning into it. Yeah. Is that a phrase that you hear a lot?
Well, I think the key thing with the book title was I can't take credit for it because so many people are like, why is it veganish? It was my book editor in Gill. And the ish is important because also, like, I do a lot of events and demonstrations. And what I noticed was there was a pattern of there being a teenager, maybe in and around 14, and a mother. And, you know, it was to try and see how can everyone's needs be met. And fundamentally, what I try and go for is no one in my family is actually vegan at all. But if you go predominantly for focusing on food that tastes delicious, everyone can agree with that. And I always tell people to kind of think in terms of assembly, like maybe if I'm making a curry, I might section off a portion of it. And if a friend wants to put in a bit of chicken or some fish or something, you know, they're happy. And it's about everyone's needs being kind of being met. But absolutely, I think if this is a lifestyle that people want to dabble in and out of, perfect. There's no rule book. There's no authority above. The only thing I will say is I was at an event recently in Medley and the head chef came out and he said, are you a real vegan? And I said, yes. And he said, I had 6, and he kind of did little air quotes, vegans at a wedding last week and they all had the fillet steak. And he said, I went to so much trouble to make them a lovely meal, you know. So I think that's the only thing, is don't say you want a vegan option and have a chef go to the effort. But otherwise, I think it's a very open lifestyle. If people want to dabble or if they want to commit, great. The good thing is now at least there's more options.
Yeah, there certainly is. And that's the kind of big one for me. So I live with a meat eater who basically thinks you need to eat meat every single day. Uh-huh. So, you know, if Jamie comes home and I'm like, oh, I made this chickpea curry, he's like, George, like, I need chicken. Yeah. Or I need something else. So there is kind of separate dinners in our house now. But that's a really good tip that you just said about, you know, taking out a portion of the curry. Yeah. And maybe you could put chickpeas in your bit and then...
Or just make the chickpea curry and then section off a portion of it and, you know, maybe add it to some stir fried chicken or even, you know, grill some chicken breasts on a Sunday and add them into a casserole, into a soup, into a curry, whatever, you know, whatever it is. And think of food assembly, because most of the flavour is already in the sauce, in the vegetables, because a lot of people, they look at me and they go, I can't be cooking 2 dinners, you know. And I don't want to cook 2 dinners. No one else does. But if you think of that kind of assembly, you know, when you just add in the protein source, if you want, it makes it easier.
Over the last couple of years, what have you seen in terms of the benefits of fruit and veg and how they make you feel? Because since I've been sick and, you know, my diet has changed in terms of just consuming more mm-hmm. plant, I do feel better. I think I look better. My skin is definitely clearer. And I have more energy, which I didn't expect to have, because you think that if you're not eating meat, then you're not getting that energy.
I know. And there's this really weird conditioning. And just to go back to one of your points there, it's really interesting because Canada, for the first time ever on their official government food pyramid, it's the first time that dairy is not included on it. What they've said is, if you want to enjoy dairy, great, but don't think that it's essential. And I do think it's really important for us all to kind of relook and go, wait a minute, why do we always associate a roast with a Sunday or a typical Irish breakfast being? Or, and I think sometimes it's kind of nice to step back from habits and say, what actually feels right and what suits me? And maybe what you're finding is you're actually just, again, doing what's right for you rather than maybe what might be so sort of the social norm. And definitely for me, I found that really invigorating. I always felt awkward about, oh, just go along and eat whatever the boys are eating, or, you know, just be easy, be accommodating. And really, in terms of once I actually found my voice and said, no, hang on a minute, this is the way that I want to eat, and I built up the confidence, whether it was letting a restaurant know maybe in advance or whatever, I felt so empowered. And I think that clears that mental space of the back and forth of, you know, wanting to be over accommodating. And I think especially as women, we almost feel like we have to be the good girl and don't be complicated and be easygoing. And it's really silly because people are perfectly happy to accommodate you. But on a basic level, what I found is skin, hair, nails, energy, phenomenally better. And mental clarity is a huge thing. And as well, what I love is we're living in an era now where we're all aware of climate change. And what I find very empowering about adopting a plant-based diet is there was a really interesting study done by the University of Oxford where they said that by adapting a plant-based diet, you can reduce your carbon footprint by up to 70%. And I think now what I find is it's very democratic. It's not about, you know, one or two people doing everything perfect. It's everyone can do their own little bit and everything will make a difference. And to me, it's really empowering to know kind of on a day-to-day basis, at least I'm kind of trying to lessen my carbon footprint as much as possible by eating the way I do. So definitely mentally, I think that helps.
And I think with this podcast, like I'm certainly not trying to convince anyone to be vegan and either are you. So, you know, it's just about kind of increasing the fruit and veg. And then if they have meat once a week, that they just take a minute to appreciate.
Yeah.
That instead of having it every day.
That's the biggest thing. And I say to people, like, if you are going to eat meat, in an ideal world, you know, build a relationship with the local butcher, try and understand and know that there's a difference between are your eggs free range or battery. You know, like I've seen, and I fully appreciate everyone has a different food budget, but I've seen 20 eggs for €2. And if you break down to, hang on a minute, what are these chickens actually eating? How can that be? You know, how is that actually possible? Whereas, let's say the free range organic ones are a little bit more expensive. But the reality is that those hens do have a nicer life. And I do think that there's an energy in food and in what we eat. And it's an investment that you will get something back from it, you know, and especially like I find because I'm freelance, I can't really afford to be sick ever. You know, there's never a right time to ever, you know, be sick or you just. You have to be as healthy as possible. So I really do prioritize eating as well as I can because I find in terms of my work, then, you know, you get that back. I've got the energy to do whatever needs to be done.
And where do you get the confidence, say, if, you know, you go over to, say, your sister-in-law's every Sunday for dinner and you go home and you've eaten 10 roast potatoes and a big lump of chicken and you just don't feel good after it. And how the next week, do you bring your own food or do you suggest?
I write about this actually in the book because the thing is, he doesn't mind me saying this because I actually always say it at all my demos, but about a year ago, my brother invited me out for dinner and I'd been recipe testing and I said, you know what, I have like a vegan cheesecake here, I'll bring it for dessert. And he said, sounds good. And then about half an hour later, I texted him and I said, what are we eating? And he said, spaghetti bolognese. Now he has young children. My parents were also invited as well. And like, I'm not going to inconvenience him, but I just said, that's cool. I'll bring a curry. And I kind of found myself on the doorstep going, okay, I'm invited over, but I'm bringing the main course and the dessert. But that's life. Like I always say to people, especially when they're younger, like, you have to take responsibility for if you've chosen to eat like this. Don't think that the world is going to be able to accommodate it. Bring a dish, learn how to cook. I say to some people, if they're of the right age, maybe start doing some of your own shopping or your own cooking, or you have to take control of it. And you can't think that every restaurant or everyone is going to be able to cook up delicious vegan food. But what I find is it's really satisfying if you bring your dish and everyone enjoys it. Like the biggest thing I'm trying to do is really change people's perceptions of vegan food. It's not that I'm saying everyone should or even has any interest in being vegan, but I hate the idea of them not thinking that the food is tasty or not thinking that it can be delicious. And even now, there's like, especially on Instagram, there's a few really cool like vegan bodybuilders and athletes, and they're just, it's amazing how they're just banishing those myths of that you know you wouldn't have any energy. And I love that when people are just changing people's perceptions.
Do you feel judged as a vegan? Because I feel like there is, like, it really riles people up, doesn't it?
It can. I don't get involved in those conversations. Like, what I feel is it's a really personal decision. It's one that you can't make for anyone else and no one else can make for you. And if someone wants to, great. And I was well aware, like, when my book came out, I knew that it could be easily placed beside, I don't know, Jamie Oliver's top Sunday roast. And if that's what the book you want, buy that book. But if someone is drawn to this lifestyle, what I feel is they shouldn't feel any shame. They shouldn't be made feel uncomfortable about it. And what I was hoping to do with the book is to have the kind of food that if they were cooking it, people would go, oh my God, that looks really delicious. And that's all you want. And, you know, because originally I was really worried that I'd feel really isolated. I'd be eating by myself. And what I will say is if the food is good enough, you're never going to be alone. Like there'll always be people wanting to come over for food and you'd be fine.
And there's so many people, I think, that they can't really put their finger on it, but after eating, they just don't feel good or they have this kind of guilt. I definitely have anxiety around food, and I've spoken about this on my podcast so many times since I got sick, because every time I go online, something else gives you cancer, and I say, oh, well, I ate that, and maybe the cancer is my fault, and this is what we're doing to people, you know, and I do feel anxious, and it's something I'm getting help for, and I'm working on it every day.
I know exactly what you feel, and I think that food is a really complicated issue. But what I also know is it's one of the few things in life that if we want to control, we can. Like, there's a lot that happens, and cooking my own food, that's the way that I can take care of, I suppose, my energies. And I'd be really sensitive to, like, if I have a coffee, I'm completely wired. I feel really anxious if I have too much sugar or anything like that. And I think we're not made aware of the fact that there is a lot, you know, there's much more in food, especially in terms of additives, that can be a little bit scary. But I really think everyone, you know, should be more encouraged in terms of cooking and preparing their own food if they can.
I saw on your Instagram you spoke about Marie Kondo and how organizing your life and your kitchen and things like that.
I
was getting better, so I was shoving things into drawers for a year when I was sick, even though I had so much help. I was just like, oh, I'll deal with that another time. And that's when the clutter started to build up. And then when I got better, I said to Jamie, I can't move on from this unless we do a complete clear out of our house. And we just, then that Netflix show came along, Marie Kondo, Tidying Up, I think it's called. So I started to watch that, and I was like, this is what I need.
Oh, brilliant.
So do you adapt her ways to your life?
I read that book a few years ago and I loved it. And it to me, it changed the way I shop and everything like that. And I think, I think the show was absolutely brilliant. And I think, it changed them. I mean, I'm not as organized as her in any way, shape or form, but I definitely like, sometimes I get sent products to review, and if I know that I'm not going to use them, give it as a gift, give it away to a charity, or, you know, and especially in terms of how I shop, like, I'm really aware, because, you know, the great thing about, you know, say maybe adopting a plant-based diet is that it is good for the environment, but it moves on further in terms of, now something I'm kind of passionate about is trying to minimize single-use plastic. But also, you know, fashion can be a highly toxic industry, especially things like fast fashion have been very damaging environmentally. And what I love about Marie Kondo is she kind of makes you focus on what you actually love, and I think that's really lovely. And it's lovely that you have the support in that as well, because it's great if whoever you live with kind of goes for that as well.
Yeah, definitely. And it did help me a lot to get rid of some stuff. And then the way she says, like, you thank it, and then you kind of send it on its way. I really recommend that documentary for anyone who is, I suppose, just feeling a little bit uneasy. I think if you start with a clear out, you can kind of, it can help you kind of clear your mind and move on. What's an average day like for you then, food wise?
Well, most days what I try and do is I work completely from home, and, you know, especially around deadlines and things like that, there was days when I hadn't left the house at all. So what I try and do is I try most mornings to get up and go to 7 a.m. yoga class in Yoga Hub, which is actually just around the corner. And that's good, because that sort of gets me out, a bit of fresh air, rather than kind of just falling downstairs. I have a bit of time to kind of think through. But before that, I might do a hot water and lemon or apple cider vinegar in a glass of water, and then just go do the yoga class. And when I come back, if I'm rushing out the door, a really quick smoothie. I don't tend to put any supplements in, but sometimes I might put in maybe iron or maca powder, which is good for energy, but it's frozen berries, banana, almond milk, and or maybe a porridge or granola, or make my own coconut yogurt or things like that. I love a good breakfast. And then lunch, usually leftovers from the night before, and then dinner, curries, casseroles, that kind of thing. And I always, like, I bulk cook my dinners, because I don't really, like, you know, I probably cook about 2 or 3 times a week. I don't love the idea of cooking every single night. I think it takes, you know, too much time, and it takes the joy away from it. So I'll always bulk cook, and things that are good cold as well.
A good tip that I learned from Bio actually was, so have 2 dinners, like, during the week, so midweek dinners, and then rotate them. So then you make 2.
I get what you mean?
So a chickpea curry on a Monday and Tuesday, and then on a Wednesday and Thursday, you can have something else. But it's really good to, you know, you you don't have to think about, okay, I have to make four dinners instead. Yes. Now you're cutting it down to two.
No, that makes complete sense as well. And I think also, especially because I get really into cooking, but like 2 or 3 hours can kind of disappear and it's not practical to be like that as well. And especially kind of during developmental times, like it's just, it's mad and it's nice to sort of step away from it and just have it be a little bit functional for a few days and then come back to it. So yeah, that makes complete sense.
I saw that you designed a menu for the Marion Hotel. Yes. And it was featured in Vogue.
I know. Wow. I know. It's just, that was amazing. They came to me back in October after my book had come out, and they're obviously, they have clients kind of coming from all around the world, and they said, this is something we want to do. And rather than just giving them, you know, a plain plate of pasta or something, we'd love really interesting vegan dishes. And then I explained to them, I said, well, listen, Veganuary is kind of a big thing. And they said, listen, let's look at it for January. And it was a really funny thing because it's sort of like bringing out a book, or I suppose even, you know, a podcast, or you do your best, but you have no idea where things are going to go. And I remember we launched it, and about a week before the PR company came and they said, we're going to have to shut down the restaurant. We didn't think that the demand would be, you know, in terms of the launch. They said we thought we were going to have 30, but now we have 55. And then I remember the day of the launch was just so busy. But there was something so gratifying about thinking, I wasn't sure what would people think. Would they say, where's the steak? What's going on? And just to see everyone smiling, happy, enjoying vegan food was just surreal. And then it's now become part of the menu there, and not a weekend goes by where I don't get a message from someone saying, first family occasion, we could all go out to a lovely restaurant. My dad had the steak, my brother had a burger, but I was able to have 3 vegan courses. And, you know, when you haven't had that in a long time, it's really exciting. So, yeah, it's been.
And what's it like to go into a hotel then where these chefs, you know, they do what they do, and yeah, you're coming in going, well, you know, maybe we just need to throw this steak away.
I was, you know, in a lot of ways, I was really pleased that at least I'd done some professional training. Had I not, I would have been really intimidated. But I learned a lot about the Marion, and in terms of, obviously, it's a stunningly beautiful 5-star hotel, but everyone is so gracious. But that goes beyond, it's, you know, it's to the core, it's right inside the kitchen. And I think sometimes you don't appreciate, I didn't anyway, like, what is it that makes these places so special? But when you see them literally kneading the flour to make every single piece of bread that goes on people's tables, you're like, God, there's so much attention to detail. But no, they were incredibly gracious, really respectful. They had had some clients looking for vegan food and they were excited about it. But yeah, it was like, initially it was like mortifying. And also, like, for a kitchen to adjust to vegan cooking, you know, it's difficult because obviously you have to have completely separate utensils, frying pan, everything like that. So like in the Marion, they have a whole separate like desserts trolley with all the different utensils that are used just for the vegan. And I think that's where it's important to have someone like me who lives this lifestyle, rather than just a chef saying, take out X, Y, and Z ingredients. It's important to kind of say, actually, it's not just about what's on the plate, it's how and where and everything. But yeah, an amazing, amazing experience. And thankfully, you know, commercially, it's gone well. And I think that's the thing is, if any, you know, retailers or restaurants are kind of sticking their noses up at veganism, I'd really encourage them to maybe try and open up their minds, because commercially it's, you know, it's a good business opportunity as well. It's a growing community. And at the moment, Borbia estimate that 2% of the Irish population are vegan and 8% are vegetarian. But I know from a few years ago going into my supermarket and to try and find dairy-free milks, there was a tiny section and now it's a wall. You know, it's a growing community, and I just think people kind of have to stay up with the trend and how it's moving.
And what was it like then to be featured in Vogue? What was that? Who told you this was happening?
This just happened. A lovely, a really nice PR girl, Sandra Morris, sent me a message, and she sent me an email, and it was on Sunday, and she said, Polly, you're in Vogue. And I said, sorry, you know, because you don't expect to put these things together. And it's not actually even like British Vogue, it's Vogue.com, which is actually US based. And they've done a roundup of the best vegan places in Dublin. And we were number one, which is very exciting. And just, again, I'm kind of blown away. And it's just, it's so exciting. But I will kind of draw back to, it all came from, I suppose, trying to do something that felt true and right to me. And it's just, I think everyone has that innate kind of, what are you passionate about? What do you love? And kind of, as you said, now I kind of feel like I finally got on that path, because I was very lost in my 20s and I, you know, felt very uncomfortable, and career-wise, everything took ages to get off. But once I kind of came back to what feels right for me, it's just been a really lovely year of whether it's been the book or I got to co-host my launch with a blogger from the UK called Deliciously Ella Mills, who I'm a huge fan of. And it's just been, it's been such a lovely experience.
And what was it like in your 20s then? Were you just kind of, you didn't know what you wanted to do?
And I look back now and what I realised was I was so concerned with what does everyone else think of me and what should I be doing and what's cool and what's, that I didn't take 2 minutes to actually think, what do I want? What do I like? And I think a lot of that has to do with, now I think people are much more able to independently think for themselves because they curate the news that they get. You know, you can decide what kind of programs do you want to watch, what kind of people do you want to follow. Like, you curate the information that comes at you and you can be much more kind of unique and authentic. Whereas years ago, I kind of just wanted to just fit in, you know, quote unquote. And I was really uncomfortable with a lot of that. And you would have felt very, very kind of lost, didn't have much of a sense of direction. And I was kind of, I don't want to say hopeless because that's not a nice word, but I was a big dreamer. Like, I kind of said, oh, sure, it'll all work out, but I'd no plan. And then the years kind of go on, and when your friends are progressing and moving on with their lives, it can suddenly feel quite lonely.
It just goes to show what's meant to be will never pass you by.
Yeah, but you have to do the work. And mm-hmm. that's something that I think I'd never underestimate. Like, I've spoken about it before and I don't mind, but I speak to a counsellor and I think that's really important for people to have someone outside of your friends. And I think if there's something that's been bothering you, especially if it's kind of at this stage, maybe a bit older, a bit stale, or if there's a conversation that you need to have, don't avoid that. You know, try and come into the present as much as possible. And it was about after about a year of seeing a counsellor kind of regularly that suddenly it felt as if my life was opening up and I was actually able to kind of get through to myself. And you know, in those times of transition, some friendships change, some goals, some directions, people come in and out of your life. But it's so much more satisfying, you know, than being in that kind of dreamy daisy kind of world.
So would you say then your life has changed dramatically to what it was?
100%. It's been like, it's literally like night and day. It's black and white. And obviously I still have, you know, say my school friends and things like that, and you know, it's lovely to have the long relationships, but I do feel like a completely different person. Like, I feel like I've found my own voice. And I will say there's one thing that I've noticed, and when you're on the outside and you're seeing people doing all these things that you really wish that you could be doing or you'd love but you don't know how, I think if you don't pay attention to that, it can turn into jealousy, which is quite a bad, you know. And whereas now I find I don't feel jealousy. I genuinely am. If I see someone doing something amazing, or I'm genuinely inspired by them, and it's kind of because I've cleared the negativity out of my head. And I do think things like that are important. Like, I think self-help gets a weird rap, but I'm a big believer in, there's a few books that have honestly changed my life. And years ago, there's a guy called Tony Robbins, and he has an event in London, and I went to that. And
did you go to a Tony Robbins event?
I did
event?
The firewalk. And I will say, like, I know everyone's so quick to kind of bash these things, but I will say that absolutely changed my life. You know, I thought it was absolutely incredible. I think what he's done is amazing. And in terms of self-help, there's a few books like Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your Life. There's a few things that I've read and they have made a huge difference. So I'm kind of a big believer in investing in yourself and taking care of your mind if possible, and trying to evaluate things.
The night that I found out my cancer didn't spread, I stumbled across the Tony Robbins documentary on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the last things he says in that documentary was, life doesn't happen to you, life happens for you.
Wow.
And that was like a switch went in my brain. It came in my life when I needed it most. That documentary was so weird because I wasn't kind of into that sort of self-help stuff before. Mm-hmm. And it absolutely hit me like a ton of bricks. And I cried for like hours afterwards because it was a very emotional day as
of
it
course.
Was.
Yeah.
And then that allowed me to kind of think differently about the cancer and what was happening to me. So that's amazing. So you saw him in the flesh over in London.
He's huge. He's like, I think, is he like 6'8" or something like that? But so charismatic. But he has these little tiny techniques. And again, I don't know, because obviously I'm out of school a long time. I'm 35 at this stage. But like, I learned at his like really useful things that I'm like, hang on a minute, this is really helpful. And especially if you are self-employed, there's certain skills you have to learn. No one else can do the work for you. And I always think it's kind of like going to the gym. If we could pay someone else to do it for us, of course we all would. But there are little things that you don't get away with not learning how to do kind of yourself. And some of it is really scary, but it's not impossible. And I find that weekend thing that I went to with him was really good.
So what sort of tips did you take from him then? Was it the gratitude or?
I think the biggest thing is just feeling that you're empowered to actually create the life that you want. And again, as I said, I was a huge dreamer at all. How would that happen? Or would it just work out? And I think we kind of see magazines and we see people on the cover of them and, we see success and we hear about bestsellers, but we very rarely hear about the graft and the day-to-day routines. And that's the bit that he has one expression, consistency is the mother of skill. And that's been something that I battle with a lot because I love going for a run or, cooking a really, great dinner or whatever. I'm not good at implementing the day-to-day habits, whereas that's really what makes a difference, in terms of getting it in your diary to see your friends weekly, if possible, or, getting to yoga as right. It's the day-to-day things that have made a huge difference rather than the big. So the biggest thing I got from him is just trying to have small, consistent habits rather than one big kind of dynamic change.
And it seems like it's allowed you to be your true self, whatever, this journey that you've been on over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Do you criticize yourself? Is there like anxiety around releasing a book or, going into the Merian? Like, how do you get through that?
Well, the book, I actually pitched it 3 times. And again, I think it's really important to say that because I think people look at online and I find that, people need to kind of explain, actually, they said no loads of times. But then what was great was once Gail agreed to publish it, you have the support of a team. And that's a really nice thing because a lot of what I do is completely, I'm pretty much at home. Whereas suddenly, you have a team and there's someone to help with marketing. There's an editor to help and go through it. And, of course, I was nervous, but I did feel like I was kind of part of a team and there's people to run things by. And, you're not expected to figure it out all by yourself. And then in terms of going into the Merian, it was nerve-wracking going in, but I did have like an innate kind of, I suppose, a confidence in, I know it had only been like my family and my friends, but I did feel the food was delicious. And thankfully, it has been so exciting that, as I said, commercially, I'll get, it's lovely when you get the instant, the feedback, but otherwise the waiters will say so-and-so really enjoyed that. But social media is brilliant because you can get people saying, I really enjoyed that or this or... But, you have to trust that tiny little kind of glimmer because if you love something, the odds are someone else might too. It's just about finding a few lucky people who might back you. Like, I suppose in my case, it was my publishers or else it's the Marion Hotel, taking a gamble.
And believing in what you're doing.
Yeah. And I suppose just waiting for the right opportunity and the right people because they will come, they always do. But also believing, like if there's someone doing the best coffee and they really believe in it, I don't know. You can't put a mathematical kind of scheme on it, but to some extent there is just open up the door and have faith. And that's the hardest thing because I love the idea of trying to control all my life. And the hardest thing I found is to develop some sort of faith, but I'm getting better at it.
And you've spent time in LA. Do you think the lifestyle over there is just entirely different to Ireland?
LA is, what is it? I think it's like a Jack Kerouac quote. And he said, it is the most brutal of cities. Like, it can be the best place in the world. Like, dreams are made overnight there. And you could have someone in a school play in Brighton suddenly going on to, be in a Bond movie and LA is a big dream place, but it's absolutely brutal as well. And I went out there when I was 28. No, sorry, I need to backtrack. I first went out there when I was 24 as part of a reality TV show with RTE. They picked 5 guys, 5 girls. It was called Hollywood Trials. And they brought us out to acting school and things like that. And I found that experience really tough kind of towards the end of it. Like, I had no experience of reality TV and you need to be savvy and you need to be smart and you can't, they need to make a show. And then I went back when I was 28 and I was trying to get into presenting and I had an agent and I went on so many meetings and you leave every single one of them going, oh my God, that was great. That was amazing. And then you never hear from anyone ever again.
Wow, that's tough.
Well, what's bad is I think Irish people are quite blunt and you're not expected to read between the lines. But in LA, they will nice you to death and oh my God, you're amazing and you're Irish and you're this. And then 6 weeks on, they say, you need to meet John, but John's not in town for a month. So then you stay on another month and then you need to realize when it's time to go home. So coming home for me was the right decision. I'm glad I went. I felt I stayed a little bit too long, but it's an amazing, it's a big city. I went back there last summer and I did a cooking course, and it's a much nicer place to be on holiday rather than seeking and searching work. But it was a really good lesson for me, because sometimes you can feel, oh, the grass is greener, or, you know, there is nothing more miserable and lonely than being in LA, which, yeah, it's an amazing city, but driving around, no money, no friends, no family, no routine, no nothing. Give me Dublin 100 times over. I'm so much happier to be here, to be busy, to have my friends, to have my family. And it's really made me appreciate home. I kind of needed to go away to appreciate it here.
My best friend Audrey, she went to LA the same as you, went over, was acting over there, and it took her to move to LA to find her passion, which is art.
Oh wow.
So she started painting over there and came home earlier than expected because her art is taking off.
Brilliant.
And she came home and she's a studio here now and her business is thriving.
Yeah.
And it kind of took her to move away from home to find that in herself.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer in, if you're creative, you know, there's nothing worse than, it's like a wheel stuck in the mud or whatever. If you're creative, if you've ideas and you want to share them and you can't, you know, you can't find an outlet for it, that can be really tough, you know. Whereas I love the fact that at least I'm home, I'm busy, I'm working, I'm, you know, it's a great feeling. It's different though, because I qualified in journalism, and like back then you used to have to pitch to editors, and in-house magazine jobs were very tricky to get. Whereas now what's lovely is people can kind of be their own content creators, whether, you know, it's having your own blog or your own website. Whereas years ago, if you had an idea, it was very difficult to, you know, if you wanted to express yourself creatively, you were really relying on someone else being the gatekeeper. Whereas what's so cool now is that people can kind of, you know, develop their own content, their own videos.
And who do you look to then?
Who do I look to? I mean, in the UK, I love Deliciously Ella. In the US, I think the Goop podcast is really, really interesting.
I love the Goop podcast.
I do. And there's one today with Dax Shepherd, who's brilliant. And obviously anything Oprah is amazing. And I was just back from, I was over in Phoenix last week at a thing called the International Women's Summit. And Liz Gilbert was speaking there at that, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love. And she's just one of the best speakers I've ever heard. Just incredible. So I think it's about, you know, just find, you know, whoever and whatever you love.
A tip that I would like to share with people is, before I got sick, I would watch TV in bed, or, you know, just go to sleep and, you know, scroll through my phone or Instagram, Facebook, whatever. Now I always have a book on my bedside locker.
Nice.
Because, and listen, I may only read one page a week,
yeah,
but at least it's there, and at least I'm growing and evolving,
yeah,
you know, through reading.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's great. Like the Goop podcast, if people aren't into reading,
yeah,
people can get a lot from that as well. But I think so many people are opening their minds up and are, you know, looking to other women for inspiration and for tips,
yeah,
on just how to get through this crazy life and how to look after yourself, because there's so many people getting sick and people just do need to look after themselves and prioritize themselves more. Can you give us any sort of advice for a healthy life and what people can do? Because I suppose it's still relatively the start of the year and people may think, okay, this is the year that things are going to change for me. And what can they do to kind of improve their quality of life?
I think the biggest and the most important thing is social media is a huge part of our lives. I'd really advise everyone to curate their feeds. You know, if there's people that, if you're getting that, like, you know, that sense of maybe if it's envy or jealousy or discomfort or whatever, delete, get rid of them. Try and find things that are genuinely inspiring and try and control the messaging that you are receiving. Secondly, I think sleep has just been like game changing. There's a thing on an iPhone, I'm sure you can do it on Androids. It's called Screen Time, where you can set a limit. So now for me at 9 o'clock, a little thing kind of flashes up and it shuts down all my apps. And that's been really, really good. And as you said, you know, then it allows time to read the book that seems to be taking me about a year to read now. Mm-hmm. Whereas years ago I'd read a book a week. Sleep is really important. And I think the third thing that's really helped me is find your voice. You know, we're living in a time politically where there's so much going on, and I'm not, say, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, I'd have consistently thought, oh, that's the politician's job, that's someone else. Or, whereas we're living in a really, I suppose, exciting time in Irish history. Like, obviously we have you know, we've had two massive referendums over the past couple of years that I think have really been actively dominated by social awareness being created around, obviously, yes to gay marriage and yes to abortion rights within Ireland. But to me, they were about individuals having a voice online. And I think in generations to come, if something happens and if someone says, you know, Twitter was free, Instagram was free, I didn't use it. I just think don't let history change in a negative way and feel that you didn't use your voice in some way, shape or form. Like, I hope I'm not too boring, but I was giving out the other day about, I can't get over how much single-use plastic is involved in air travel. And then I found this brilliant article about the fact that it all just goes into landfill and things like that. But by me sharing that, maybe one person might go, hang on a minute. Or, you know.
Yeah, she has a point there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it starts, and you know, it starts a momentum and everyone can have a voice now in that way. It's a really exciting time. And I think we kind of have to have our say about what it is that we're passionate about, whether it's, obviously I care about animal rights hugely, you know, single-use plastic, climate change, things like that. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, find your voice in some way, shape or form.
I was thinking the other day, the students protested against the government and climate change and we need to do more. And I was driving home from work. I work in a newsroom, so we're consumed by this all the time. And I was thinking, God, like, I think this is the first time in a long time that I've thought my daughter is going to be growing up with some pretty cool kids.
I know.
And
I know.
Instead of feeling fear, so my child was born when Donald Trump was president. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe like I'm like giving birth and Donald Trump is president. That's so weird.
Yeah.
And I was driving home and I was like, God, like she's going to have some pretty cool kids to look up to, like people that are out there and standing up for themselves. And I think we are very lucky with Gen Z, because I've looked into Gen Z a little bit. My husband did a massive project on them and they are going to change the world.
Yeah. No, and I think in that way it's really exciting. And I suppose for me, I grew up and Mary Robinson was our president. And I think just subconsciously in a tiny way to feel, actually, hang on, a woman can be president. That got into, you know, it gets into your, in and underneath your skin and it's exciting. So yeah, absolutely for your daughter. It's very cool.
Your healthy habits.
Yes.
So I've asked you for your tips on a healthy life and I know it's probably doubling up a little bit, but you're personally, what do you eat and drink or little habits that you have that help you get through the day?
Always snack. Always bring snacks. Always bring your keep cup. Really important. And always start your day with as much water as possible. I find that is one way that I tend to not find myself exhausted or overeating. If first thing every morning, I'll usually have a pint glass of water topped up with the kettle so it's not freezing cold, with some apple cider vinegar or some lemon. And I find after that, I tend to just feel my mood is much more balanced. So that's really important. And if coffee doesn't agree with you, don't feel bad about giving it up. It was one of those things, I just got into such a habit of drinking coffee all the time and I just found I was constantly wired. So
the thing is, before I got sick, I used to go to the water cooler and work, mm-hmm. and I'd fill up one of those little cups and then I'd go back to my desk and I'd sit down, and then when it was time to pack up and go home, I'd look over and that glass was still full.
I know.
So now what I do is, and this is one of my healthy habits, so I try to drink a pint of water first thing in the morning. But what I do is I stand at the water cooler and I'll drink one glass
and then bring another. It with you. Yeah.
So I'll try to stand there and drink a few and then bring it back to the desk. But it's just little tiny things. And I think with these little healthy habits, and if you start small, like you start with Meatless Monday or whatever it's called, and you start, you know, eating less meat on one day, and then it kind of spills over into two, and then you're increasing your fruit and veg, and then all of a sudden you're noticing, God, I feel a bit better and I've got more energy. And looking at you here now, like, your skin is so clear. You look so healthy. You look so happy.
Well, do you know what's funny is it is a 360 effect. And it was really weird, because what I found with when I, you know, adjusted my diet, I actually felt like I'd found the golden ticket. And I know that sounds really cliche, but I'd spent so long like buying products or thinking if I have that dress or, and listen, I still love the products. I love the dresses, but when I really started, you know, eating in the way that I do now, I did feel like I'd got the glow that the moisturizer was supposed to give me. And then I think all those things, they can be lovely enhancements, but definitely it does all start kind of from the inside out. So
absolutely. And I did that for years, and I'd go to an event and I'd go in at, you know, to the mirror, and an hour or two later, and I'd look in the mirror and go, God, I look like crap. Like, you know, when you do your makeup again, and I was constantly putting things on to try and look better. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I got cancer and I was all almost forced into eating better. And listen, like, I didn't have a bad diet before, but like I said, my fruit and veg consumption has trebled. So I go out now and it's 5 hours later and I look in the mirror and I look
you
grand,
are just, you know, glowing and gorgeous.
Because you can't, it is possible to glow from the inside out.
I think it's really important. And as I said, I love my product. I mean, obviously, I'm really strictly cruelty free about my products, but I love nothing more. And, you know, I love beauty as much as anyone does. But it's amazing when you kind of take that much more sort of holistic approach, the results are 10 times better, I think.
I'm going to leave you with this question. I talk about God winks a lot. Okay. Do you know about God winks?
No.
It's in Oprah's book. So she talks about God winks are like when everything lines up perfectly.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You're like, yes, that was, yeah, an awesome moment. Have you had one recently?
Let me try. Oh, God, this is real. I think even, I suppose, just reaching out, just reaching you and things like that. This has been really nice. And obviously then last night, I listened to Alison Canavan's podcast. And I suppose God winks are just, I suppose, feeling much more comfortable kind of in the moment. But yeah, sometimes there's lovely days where you kind of, you find the feather and then you're, you know, you just feel happy and joyful. But I can't think of anything specific, but I know that book. It's What I Know For Sure, isn't it?
Yeah.
Amazing.
It is such
so
a good book. And have you got any, if people are kind of, well, I was a little bit scared because I went on Netflix a couple of days ago just to kind of look into veganism and things like that, and I was a bit scared to watch those programs because I didn't want it to be rammed down my throat, but I watched Forks Over Knives,
yeah,
and I didn't find that it was rammed down my throat at all. Actually, it's very educational. So is there any sort of documentaries?
Well, they're American, that's the thing that I think it is important to kind of, and America has some GMO and things like that, because people always pull me up on this and they're like, those documentaries are American, you know. I think it's important to kind of take it all with a pinch of salt, but I think Cowspiracy is really fascinating. But if I could direct anyone to anything, I would look up University of Oxford climate change, and that was just, it was a fascinating report, and I'd encourage them maybe just to read that. I thought that was really good. And then in terms of documentaries, if you want something good, there's one called Fat, Sick and Nearly Dead about this businessman called Joe Cross, and he went on a 40-day juice fast, but he travels all around America and kind of explores kind of food advertising and marketing, and I found that really cool.
And where can people find you online?
On my website, holly.ie, and then Instagram. I think everyone's favourite platform at the moment is Instagram, so I'm hollywhite.ie there as well.
Thank you so much for coming in today. You are actually a ray of sunshine in real life. So thank you so much. And I can't wait to check out your book. And thank you for gifting it to me.
Not at all. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast. Please subscribe so you can be the first to hear about new episodes. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a review. You can check out thegoodglow.ie for more on my story and follow me on Instagram @GeorgieJCrawford.